Thanks for joining us for Take Two. This is episode 5. I feel like a lot has happened in this week. We have a lot to get through in this time. So thanks for joining us, Greg Hughes, Jim DeBacchus. If you're just joining us for the first time, thanks for being with us. We are in, I guess, the final stretch of the legislative session. That's right. Only have till March 14th, so.
Hallelujah!
Yeah, a lot has to get accomplished, and not including a tax bill that's, I think, 257 or 75 pages, a lot. I haven't personally read the whole
Wouldn't
thing.
Wouldn't it be great if the legislature met every 5 years for 3 days?
For 3 days?
I mean, so much less damage would happen.
Right? Okay, yeah. So talk about the damage we're going to get done today. We want to talk about the text ban. Governor Herbert actually okay with stronger beer. We're going to talk about the BYU police force, which I feel like we need to say in air quotes right now because they may not be police for much longer. The inland port tax bill, and then some controversy on the Hill after a little story about charter schools. So that is all coming up. We want to start with the text ban. This has been brought up for 3 different years. I'll start with you, Jim. Why is this not passing? 76% of people in a Hinckley Institute poll say, let's get rid of phones and driving. Why?
Our sanctimonious legislature.
You used to be one of them.
Thank you, Heidi, for pointing out that salient point.
Okay, good.
Oh, you should have heard them on the 0.5% DUI. That means one glass of wine for a petite woman, and she's getting locked up for DUI. We brought up experts that said texting makes you 10 times more dangerous than being at 0%. 5 DUI, and the legislature said, well, it's all about safety, and then they went and passed all that.
I've never heard that tone like
so
that.
Now texting, which really is dangerous, well, people have to have freedom, blah, 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 blah. It is dangerous. It's terrible. People are dying. We got to stop playing games.
You
don't have the freedom. Yes, all the time. and I would like a horrible fine. I mean, what if I do something terrible and I don't die but somebody else does?
So we need someone to be the parent and tell us no.
Exactly.
So you would have voted for it.
I would have voted for it.
Did you vote for it the last couple of years when it was up?
I can't remember.
Oh my gosh.
So many votes.
Oh, you're so sick.
I just saw that. Bob, that was a weave. That was a Bob weave.
I'm sure I did.
I'm going to check your record. I can't believe I did it before I come up here.
Okay.
Greg, why is this dying? I heard that maybe it was too stiff a fine. It was $750, maybe more jail time than a DUI. Is that why?
There were two debates going on. This is behind the curtain stuff. You'll only hear here.
Take us behind the curtains, Greg.
So there is a distracted driving citation that you can already be charged with if you are texting and it is doing, as Jim just described, making you a dangerous driver. That is already illegal.
But it's not a primary offense.
No, I think if you are swerving and you are distracted and the officer believes that you are, they can pull you over for distracted driving. But I will tell you that there was another debate going on about around the same time on a different bill about financial literacy, and there was some reference to socialism versus a free market. And there began this robust argument to make sure that disparaging socialism was not somehow in this bill. And I think it was an irony.
What did socialism have to do with this?
I think that there was an irony with that debate that many were surprised they were even having about socialism. And then the next bill, poor Carol Spackman Moss, being a bill that would feel like a nanny state or feel like it was more heavy-handed beyond distracted driving, that it was going to... And that bill, by the way, has exceptions. Like, you can look at your phone for the map if it's the Google map.
Okay.
There's exceptions to it, too, that make the enforcement of or the likelihood to be pulled over when you're not violating it higher. And so I think that there was a theme going on that day about whether, the heavy-handedness of government versus not and where its role should be. And I think that one debate kind of blended in the mindset of the other.
You're
not going to read that in the paper, but I'm telling you, that's what was going on.
For or against it if you were there?
I'd vote against it in that we have statutes on the books right now to guard and to enforce against distracted driving.
Just one more thing. This isn't going back on Uncle Greg yet, but the legislature's hypocrisy. They are for free enterprise. They are for economic opportunity. They hate socialism. And yet, when it comes to alcohol, they are ballistic. We have a completely socialist state-run alcohol.
I voted against it.
And there
that.
It is.
Let's
it's totally
alcohol.
Inconsistent.
No, they're not completely ballistic because the governor, in his monthly address, he actually said that he wants to reflect the market right now, and he's not worried about an uptick of DUIs if we go from 3.2 to 4.8 beer. So there's obviously room for stronger beer here in Utah. Do you support the governor, I'm assuming, in this?
Do you love the governor?
All of a sudden, he's like, no, we should have no beer.
I don't know if the governor, maybe he was at 0.5 when he, maybe he was buzzed when he made that decision.
I don't think he was.
But probably not. Look, this is a classic Republican clash of values. You had alcohol and the horror of it, but then you had all of the people from the retail lobby who give them so much money, and it was morality against cash and morality. In this case, guess who won? The cash won, and all of those lobbyists, and we're going to have continue to have beer in convenience stores and in retail and grocery stores.
I might give you an Oscar for that performance.
I know, it's very...
He is an actor. We're going to talk more about that in a minute. But are you supportive of this move? A lot of people, like some family values groups, are not super excited about this.
Yeah, I think that bill's going to have a lot of difficulty getting through in the House. I think there's a argument that, look, as fewer states have this 3.2 alcohol content, that the major beer manufacturers will stop making it, which would have this detrimental impact on convenience stores, supermarkets, those who sell it. There's another side of that saying, well, they still are making it.
Yeah.
We haven't hit that moment yet. If we have a situation like that, we can deal with it when it comes. And increasing the alcohol content at the same time we've lowered the DUI level to 0.05 is an irony that I think many lawmakers are still grappling with, and that it's not carrying the day necessarily. I think it's got a tough road in front of it,
so
inside
it's not
the
done
House.
Yet.
So I don't think it is. And I have absolutely no opposition to 3.2. If there's, I'm not lying awake at night about the content. However,
okay.
I said this last year when I was speaker and this issue came up, until the very scenarios they're describing are the case, mm-hmm. and you're seeing that there's no longer this product being available.
Yep.
I don't think you're going to see this bill pass.
And we should know the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, that does have some influence on the Hill, is against this bill. So we'll see what happens there.
Everybody will head out to the liquor store and get that 11% beer, so they're not contaminated with that new 4.8% beer.
Now there's a good idea. Now people go get beer at the grocery store because they get it last minute. Not everyone goes to the, but okay. All right, next topic here. We have to talk about BYU. We talked about this last week. It was serious. The legislature was talking about the possibility of trying to change a few things to make sure that BYU was complying with actually being a police department, not just acting like one. Then this week, a surprise move to many of us from the Department of Public Safety here, the state, saying we're revoking your ability to be police officers. Did this surprise you, Greg?
You know what? The waters parted in our last episode, and we actually
opened the doors.
Agreed. We agreed on this, and I think the premise was, if you want to be a post-certified public police law enforcement agency, you comply with the laws pertaining to a public law enforcement agency.
Yeah.
If you want to be private, much like in my example last week was, if you're a hotel casino in Vegas and you want to be private, you have security that reflects the private nature or the independent nature of a property. So we said that we thought that, you know, if it quacks like a duck and walks like a duck, it's a duck. And they were not acting like a public entity. Well, the news that came out saying that they were going to be decertified as post-certified or being public, it was a surprise to me, but it makes sense. It makes absolute sense that you've got to pick which path you'd like to be and then act accordingly.
Yeah.
So I was happy to see it, actually.
Yeah, and it's been a little bit disturbing as a news organization when we can't get information from them. But Jim, we learned this week that there was an actual BYU officer who was going into Provo police files off of the campus to try to find honor code violations to turn people in. Is that just the straw that breaks the camel's back for you?
Give me a break.
No,
before
that.
By any measure, except perhaps Utah County, that is repulsive to the nature of police. You cannot use a statewide police force database to find out if people are drinking coffee or sneaking alcohol one way or another. You know what? BYU has to decide. They're going to be state certified and have to live up to our state standards, or they can become mall cops, and then their power is when they're on their campus, and that's it. But They cannot. That's a line that can't be crossed.
All right, very good. Just for the record, you graduated from BYU, right?
I went to BYU.
You went to BYU but didn't actually graduate.
I didn't actually graduate.
Okay, good. They kicked you out at some point. You're Greg, right. Where did you graduate from? I feel like we should let everyone know.
I went to Utah Valley. It's now University State College. And then I transferred to BYU. I attended, but I didn't graduate from BYU.
Okay, so you're both Utah County kids. All right.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the inland port right now, which is a big topic and a big monster to discuss. A lot of people don't even understand it, but right now there's a bill in the legislature that would do a couple things. One of them concerns me is that it would make sure that Salt Lake City could never sue, as I understand it, which is a little disturbing to me when you take away all rights to sue. It would also make a hub and spoke, which you guys can maybe explain why this is good or bad. Let's start with you this time, Jim.
Look, the hub and spoke, one of the big problems with the inland port is they refuse to say we will never take coal and bring it up through our city, and even with canvas over it or whatever, we don't want coal here ever, ever, ever. And they wouldn't put it in the law. It still exists as a possibility. It sounds stupid that you would take coal in eastern Utah and bring it here, but who knows? The legislature, they do things sometimes. So that worries me. I do like, and I think the part of the bill that is good, it allows this hub and spoke, which means a part of that system in the broader sense would be down in coal country, and they could call it part of our inland port, but it wouldn't be here, and it would help accomplish getting coal out of eastern Utah out to the West Coast. So that part is okay. The other part about not suing, you guys, stop stealing Salt Lake City's land and take it over like it's yours. They sit there like looking down at Bathsheba, and they want her so bad, and they just know they can take her, and that continues. Don't pass those bills, except the hub and spoke seems okay.
Okay. I'm just trying to imagine you wanting Bathsheba. All right, let's go to this. So does this make sense to not be transporting coal up here and then back and then back? Does this make sense at all?
Yeah, this is the issue, though. When we were talking about, let's just say what an inland port is at first.
Okay.
You've got a lot of container ships.
Correct.
That are floating out in the ocean waiting to get into our coastal ports of Long Beach and Oakland and Portland and Seattle. There's a congestion because the global supply chain is becoming more robust. Mm-hmm. The shipping of goods, the world's getting smaller. And so this is happening. This trade is happening more often. In the east, we have Kansas City, we have Louisville, we have what they call inland ports. So if you imagine a coastal port being a hub and a spoke being the inland port, our coastal ports on the western seaboard, they do not oppose Utah having an inland port because there isn't a U.S. customs bonded port to go through customs to receive or to export west of the Mississippi like there is in the east. So they welcome the opportunity. When we argued this bill last year, when we passed this bill last year, in asking the leaders of Salt Lake City and even my friend Senator DeBacchus, are you trying to ban, pick winners and losers of what we could export out of the state of Utah? The answer was, so long as it's responsible, we wouldn't want to ban natural resources. Once that bill passed, there was a change of heart in terms of not wanting to see any natural resources arrive here. But because that board began to convene and because those public hearings occurred, the feedback about the airshed pollution, how many trucks, you know, the more rail you use, the less trucks you're going to see on the road.
Yeah.
It bore out this idea. If the hub of a coastal port and a spoke of an inland port is a good principle, then why not have a hub of an inland port here in Utah and then spokes or satellite bonded U.S. customs ports in the Uinta Basin where the natural resources could be? It makes all the sense in the world, and it actually starts to see the concerns of the public addressed by smart logistics and smart solutions. So I can't compliment more the House sponsor, Representative Gibson, the Inland Port Board. They saw this last meeting they had this last week.
Yeah.
There was applause. There were public servants from around the state saying, let us be involved in this. We want to be involved. It's a very different tone than we've had in those meetings up until just this week. So that bill is doing a lot of good things. The issue of litigation, again, some people use litigation as a way to stymie an effort.
It's the American way. We can sue whoever we want, whenever we want.
And in the case of political subdivisions, sometimes taxpayers are paying both sides of that bill. And so I think that this is taken from legislation for MITA in terms of being able to do that. But we'll see what happens. You know what? The one thing that I'm happy about is we're seeing people from Salt Lake City that are up there dialoguing with the bill sponsor. You're seeing good conversations happen. I don't know, that provision may stay in the bill, it may not, but I am encouraged by the fact that people are talking to each other, which was not happening this time last year.
Talking is always positive, and I want to be an importer-exporter because it sounds so awesome. I'm going to figure out what I'm going to do. Okay, so that's a little complicated. Also complicated, you don't want me to be an importer-exporter.
No, I'm just thinking, well, what would Heidi import?
I don't know. I got to think about that. We've got to talk about the tax bill. We only
have beer.
Beer.
Look, you get that.
You know, we're the first people to have 4.8. Yeah,
hold my 3.2. Okay, here we go. This tax bill is monstrous. Have either of you read the full tax bill?
No, I haven't.
That's why I retired. I don't have
you
to.
Don't want
my
to
job
read
anymore. I don't have to read 477
I know.
Pages.
It's only 257 pages, but it's a lot of legal ease. It essentially will lower the income tax from 4.95 to 4.75. Oh, yeah. That's the income.
Right. Sorry.
And then the sales tax from 4.7 to 3.1. People are like, wait, I pay more than that. That's because your local jurisdictions can tack on, correct?
Correct.
Like an extra couple percent.
That's right.
So anyhow, there's a lot of different things that would get taxed in this. We're talking about technology, legal fees, finance, cosmetic surgery. We could get a heck of a lot of taxes out of that here in Utah. Private lessons. I don't know how you get piano teachers to cough up their money. It's complicated. Greg, can you accomplish this in 2 weeks? Is it smart? It's a lot of math. It's changing the entire state's way of getting money.
So the inherent challenge with Utah's state legislature is that we have 45 calendar days of constitutional authority. So everything the legislature ever tackles is done on an abbreviated pace because it's one of the shortest general sessions in America. So when people talk about process and time, the existence of, and those are 45 calendar days, you have like 33 working days, it's just inherently going to be faster than what you would see in states that have 3 months of a general session or what some states that have full-time lawmakers would do. So that's not necessarily a criticism. The issue here is this. If you go back 10 years, 20 years, our tax structure is meant to pay for the things that as a society we need. The roads, the schools, the health and human services, whatever that may be. 20 years ago, we had a tax system that really reflected what people spent their household income dollars on. You had a sale or an income tax and a property tax. Well, fast forward to 2019, much of what we spend our household income on is exempt from a sales tax. That means that there is a narrowing of that tax base. That is what this legislature, and it is admittedly a heavy lift because you're going to create a new tax for many services that have never been taxed before.
Yeah.
You're lowering it, but you're trying to capture that sales tax to, again, reflect what it is that households and people with discretionary funds, what they spend their money on. I admire the legislature for taking on such a meaty issue. It is hard. Even the thought of bringing a new tax online, even if you're lowering the sales tax, is so difficult to do. But if you look at our economy today versus what it used to be, something needs to be done. You can kick the can down the road and ignore it, but there'll be consequences if we're not getting the appropriate tax dollars to fund the things that government does.
And it's something you don't think about. I actually learned today, I spend a lot of money on dry cleaning, unfortunately, but I didn't realize that I wasn't getting taxed on my dry cleaning, things like that. So this is a heavy lift, and Jim, Val Ovison, the former lieutenant governor, said that he's against this bill because there's too many unknowns. Do you think there's too many unknowns, or is this doable? Do we need to get ready and think about the future?
We've got to go back up to 50,000 feet. Taxes in the state come in three chunks. Income tax,
yes.
Sales tax, and the other tax.
What's our other tax?
You got property tax.
Property tax.
Property tax. Third yes.
Okay, so it's a three-legged stool. One of the stools is sagging a little bit. Sales tax.
Yes.
Just by the nature of we're doing things. So that's what they're trying to address. Look, we had $1.1 billion in extra revenue this year. The issue is not monkeying around with this chair. It is stop thinking about huge tax cuts and start thinking about the state's liability to its children. We're still 50th, and that's not being touched. You look at a chart over the last 30 years, it's dead even as far as real dollars go in education. So the legislature ought to stop saying, we're so fiscally wonderful. The only reason we're fiscally wonderful is because we're cheating our children. If we were 25th instead of 50th in per child spending, we would be an economic wreck.
Jim is
so that's what we're balancing.
Jim is
and
making
that's
the argument
what,
for this reform, and I'll tell you why. Income tax is dedicated to education.
Yes, and we're going to lose $200 million from that, right?
No, they're actually going to try and hold. They're going to try and hold this whole thing harmless. But what is happening is, when you have all that surplus that Jim just described coming in your income tax, that's where most of that surplus is coming from. There has been a way to fund higher ed with less general fund money and use that general fund money for other expenses and then use income tax dollars that would have gone to your public schools and use that for higher ed. This would protect the income tax to be used for education if you can find revenue that would be more, which would be our general fund, which is a sales tax. So Jim has described the frustrations he's expressing, this reform would address. I will say but all that said, it is an incredibly difficult politically heavy lift, and it's hard. And the reason why you're seeing them try to cut taxes is they're not trying to increase the burden on taxpayers per se. They're trying to see that distribution addresses the areas that government is tasked with. And that's why you're seeing the tax cuts, because they're trying to do it in a way that's revenue neutral. That's wonkish, I know,
Jim's
but it's the truth.
All right, one last word. Really quick, because we got one more important topic.
It's all, don't listen to the legislature. It's all gobbledygook. we don't have to raise taxes on one soul who's making under $50,000 to make up for all of these excesses by doing two things. One, going back to all the huge corporate giveaways, like the $70 million a year we gave them in special session in the summer. And second, if we went back to the 2006 income tax, which went up to 7%, and we just left that 7% on for people making $500,000 or more, it would bring in $322 million. And I have yet to meet one person. And you contact me if you're that person.
Okay, good.
If you're making more than 500 grand a year and you would object to your taxes going up by 2% with all the money going to schools, you let me know, because I've yet to meet that person.
Okay, I'm told we're done with this. We have a special guest for this fifth episode of Take Two, because there's been a lot of talk on Capitol Hill. We have investigative reporter Chris Jones joining us. Let me explain here. There is a story about charter schools and how the legislature is involved in some of the votes and how they happen. Chris did that this week. I'm going to let him explain to you a couple sentences real quick what the story was about and why all the fuss on Capitol Hill.
And Hughes hated it. So why?
We got a debate coming.
All right,
it'll be good, though.
Tell us about your story.
Well, we've been working on this project for some time. It's called Beyond the Books. And we've been looking into education, predominantly spending on education. And that kind of led us down this path to ask the question, lawmakers and the connection to charter schools. And so we asked that question. Do lawmakers who have a financial interest in law in charter schools, is there some sort of influence that they have on the Hill? And conversely, we asked the same question about lawmakers who sit on boards, like the speaker does, or used to, Summit Academy.
Once you're former, I think you can always be a speaker.
Right.
Okay, good.
So, you know, and that there was a lot of debate about this. We heard a lot of comment from a lot of residents who said, you know, good for you. And then, of course, we heard from lawmakers who said, you know, we felt like there was some things in that story that we didn't care for. And so, you know, that's kind of why I'm here, to kind of deal with those issues.
Yeah, so we brought Chris in here, not because we want to pick apart his reporting, because every day here in the newsroom, we talk about what we do. Sometimes we regret decisions we make. Sometimes we can see that we could have made them differently. So we're here to talk about this. Greg, you had some issues. What was your number one concern?
Yeah, and that's what I appreciate about this podcast and this programming, because you have, with two former lawmakers and within a newsroom, the less likelihood that people are insular and seeing the world just from specific points of view. The two issues about the story that I thought needed further discussion was the role of volunteer boards and those lawmakers that serve on those boards. And I felt that there was a broad net that was cast across lawmakers. There are lawmakers that work within the charter school world, but you also have lawmakers that work within the public school world, and you have them in law enforcement. You kind of want a citizen legislature to represent those different aspects that state government's going to make decisions on. But if you're a volunteer board member, if you look at the conflict of interest sheets, and we make sure that this is a transparent process, volunteerism on a board is wholly different than your profession or where household income would be derived from. In the report, it seemed to me that membership or participation on a volunteer board was seen in the same prism as those who would work in that same field. And I don't think that that's a standard that's used for those lawmakers that may serve on the ACLU's board, Envision Utah's board, hospital boards. And so I think there needs to be, I think that for a public that doesn't understand or would not know, because we're, you know, that's why you elect people to get up there and get in the deep grass. If there isn't an intimate understanding of the role, the different roles that lawmakers play, that casting those that serve on volunteer boards the same as those that would work in that field, I think is inaccurate. Yeah. The second issue was the DUI footage of one particular former senator, and I felt that it had no relation to the story at all. I thought it was a distraction to that story, and I thought that if we want to get into the debate, which I know Jim is chomping at the bit to do, bringing up somebody's experience with a DUI was not relevant, but would be sensational and would probably draw eyes to a story like that. So those are the two things.
Do you want to talk about the thought process there? And before we go on, our producers are telling me in my ear we need to wrap up. We want to give this a few minutes, so we're not going to do that. We need to let you have your say here.
Okay.
So go ahead.
I'm glad you brought that up, because that is something that we've been sort of soul searching in the newsroom. I think a lot of the thinking that went into it was, at the time, this lawmaker was pushing for some pretty harsh DUI laws, and then was later caught for DUI. And I think somewhere in the back of my mind that registered that hypocrisy. But that being said, the simple fact that we put that in the story, it didn't advance the story. And I think on some level it may have distracted from it as well. So, you know, I think when as people who you know, try to report and do journalism, you know, we look at what we've done, and I think in that case maybe that wasn't the best choice. So I think if we could do it all over again, we might back up and say, hey, wait a minute, is that the best idea? So yeah. I'm glad that you brought that up.
Empathy is the greatest medicine for the work you do, public policy reporting. Do you serve on any boards, volunteer boards?
No, I don't. To kind of make sure that we're away from that.
Sure, and I think if you had, you would see that that is not an effort of self-dealing or self-service if you do. Have you been charged for a DUI?
No.
No, and I haven't either, but I've seen people that have, and I know that their life is more than just, you know, that incident, that's, you know, that unfortunate incident. And so we want to treat people fairly. We don't want to have selective, you know, logic or outrage. And so I appreciate at least discussing those parts. But we ran out of time, Jim, and I know that there was actually to that story some robust debate that should happen.
About transparency with charter schools, and I think it's a great debate to really have.
Right.
Yes, and unfortunately we have something else happening in the studio,
Nadia, could you come here? Real quick. Now, this is kind of an inside joke.
Okay.
Greg. Oh, great.
We can talk about this off camera.
Are we going to eat cake here? Okay.
We might. Yeah. But this is a very good inside joke. Yes. Thank you for joining us right now. We do have a robust debate we want to have on charter schools and what happens up at the legislature. Unfortunately, we're out of time right
next
now.
Next week.
So we're going to have it next week, and it's an important one to have. So thank you so much
for joining us today.
Thanks
for the cake, Chris.
Thank you, Chris, for coming in here and agreeing to talk to us. So thanks for joining us this week. We will try to get more of those charter schools and what you need to know about where your money's going statewide coming up next week in episode 6. Have a good one. Are you guys going to share the same fort?
I know. Look at that. That's your cake.
That one's for me. So
thanks for joining us.
That's funny.